Okay, let's get back into it. It is Tuesday morning. It's the 26th of March. And before you know it, we're going to be at the Easter weekend. You've only got today, tomorrow, Thursday. Then you've got Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday.
Yep.
Very nice.
Very nice.
Takes you into April.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
I'm afraid April is going to be less full of public holidays than you're used to because most of them have come into March.
Yep, they have.
But it's fine. I don't think anyone's complaining. We're a lazy country in any case. People will always take an extra day wherever you can get them.
Yep.
And I'm not going to blame you. I'm not going to say there's anything wrong with that.
Because there really isn't.
No.
If you can find a gap somewhere, I say take it.
Why the hell not? So it is time for Democracy 101, and this is where we come to grips with all the things that make our democracy work, the things that we need to understand about democracy. I see lots of questions for you about your decisions.
Yeah.
Jack, do you still have the EFF in the running, says TL?
Oh, hell no. Oh, hell no.
Okay.
Like, communism is the last thing we need in this country. I'm all right, thank you. So we've cancelled out four.
And then Carl has some feedback for you. If chamomile tea puts you to sleep, you're not anxious enough. Have alcohol like a real man. Well, let's get back to democracy because this morning we've got quite a lot to talk about. Let's start off with a question that I've asked and I still haven't got an answer for. There are going to be three ballot papers.
Yeah.
In this election. And I need to know why and I need to know what they're for. And also, are they going to be a kilometer long
sheets of paper?
Because we have so many parties contesting the elections.
Yeah.
So to help us answer these questions, we're going to speak to the assistant manager for outreach at the IEC. His name is Moss Pizzo. Moss, how are you? Nice to see you.
And good morning to listeners.
Yeah, good morning.
How are you, sir?
Thanks for coming in. All right, so Moss, three ballot papers, hey?
Yes.
What is this? Because you guys just you don't think there's enough work with just the two that we usually have. Now we're going to have three. What are they three for?
Once more, good morning to your listeners. Yeah. The three ballot papers essentially is to make provision for the participation of independent candidates at the national level.
So it's their fault.
Not necessarily. It's because the laws have been amended to be in line with the Constitution to give the rights that are enshrined in Section 19 of the Constitution.
All right. So what are the – when we actually go into vote, which – how will we know which ballot paper's which? I mean, like, what's going on there?
Well, like you said, there will be three ballot papers. One will be blue, which will be for the national – to National Assembly,
okay.
Which will be contested only by political parties. It's called the compensatory ballot paper. It will be blue.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next one will be pink, which will be contested also for regional seats in the National Assembly. Remember,
okay.
The National Assembly has got 400 seats.
Mm-hmm.
200
right.
seats are those that are contested only by political parties. And the other 200 seats are contested by both political parties and independent candidates. So those would be the regional to national seats.
Mm-hmm. Those are the ones that Jack said hasn't decided where his vote's going to go yet.
Yeah, I haven't decided on that one yet.
Yes.
Okay, and then the third one is the independent candidates.
The third one is the independent candidates.
All right.
But it's not for independent candidates. The third one is the provincial ballot paper contested by both independent
political
candidates
and
political parties.
Okay.
All right, but the one is just for political parties.
At national level, yes.
Okay. All right, so Moss, are these going to be very, very big sheets of paper with hundreds of candidates on them? How do you decide who gets on?
Yeah, no, they are not going to be huge ballot papers per se, but they will be reasonably long.
Mm-hmm.
But we are going to have for the national ballot paper, that is contested only by political parties, we're going to have two columns. So that it's only on the same spreadsheet or size paper, but two columns. And then for where the parties are less, like in Gauteng, we just have one column for political parties, contesting for political parties for the provincial legislature.
Given that there's so many people running for elections, both political parties and independent, how prepared is the IEC to not get their wires crossed, because having to deal with all of that movement, with the multiple voting stations across the country, how well prepared is the IEC to handle these elections?
No, I think the IEC is reasonably prepared. As it relates to voters, we're going to assist them. As they get to voting stations, they're going to see a huge ballot papers on the walls that indicates where their parties are or where the independent candidates are. All the three ballot papers will be pasted on the walls on A1 size, so that as voters are standing in the queue, they can detail where their candidate is, so that once they get into the ballot booth, they don't have to look around, where is my candidate that I want to vote for.
Now, while we're talking about that, so what is on the ballot paper? Because I know there used to be quite a lot of controversy around, there's a party symbol.
Yes, there is.
Then there's the name of the party.
It would be there.
And the face of the leader.
Of the party.
Right.
Yes.
So all three of those go on there.
They'll still be there. You'll have the name of the party.
Because I remember there was, I think it was the IFP who complained, because they didn't have, a couple of elections ago, they didn't have Mangosuthu Buthelezi's face on it.
Yeah, that was at the beginning of elections.
Yeah, 94.
The issue around. Them.
So you get to see, see who the leader is, you get the symbol of the party, and you get their name.
Yeah. And the acronym for the party.
Mm. Oh, wow. So there's four categories that you have to put for everyone. Yeah.
And then you'll have the box where you're going to then have to make your mark.
That actually answers the question I was about to ask, because literacy rates in this country are abysmal. So I imagine there's a couple of people that might want to vote, but they can't really read. But at least if the picture is there, then it kind of assists those people that aren't literate.
Yeah, or over and above that, the IEC staff will then be assisting those that are illiterate at the voting stations.
Okay.
But they do that in the presence of party agents.
And this is always interesting to me. Blind people and, is there special ballot paper for them?
No, there isn't. But there are two ways that a blind person can vote. Either by bringing somebody to assist them. Alternatively, in fact, there are three ways. Alternatively, asking the IEC staff in the presence of party agents to assist them. But thirdly, we have what we call a universal ballot template. Now, ballot template is where a ballot paper is inserted. Now, it has got an open flip on the top, so that a blind voter can tell if the whole ballot paper is inside. The universal ballot template.
Okay.
Now that they can tell that first. But secondly, it will have a hole at the bottom. Now, if the blind voter can fill this hole, it means the ballot paper is facing the right way. If they can't fill that hole, it means the hole has gone inside of the flap. And it means the ballot paper is turned upside down.
Yeah.
No, so we train them to know that once you get your ballot paper, you must fill that hole. Once you have you can fill that hole, it means it's facing the right way. If you can fill it on the top that it has gone through, it means all the blocks are in sync. So you are fine. Now all you have to do is to ask in the presence of party agents, the presiding officer, to tell you political parties in terms of where they are placed on the ballot papers in terms of the numbers. Say the party number one, number two, number three, number four. Now on this template, there is Braille. It's written in Braille, so they can read those numbers to determine where's their party.
Okay.
But over and above that, they can also use the holes where they're making a mark to determine the number, where the political their candidate is, or the political party or candidate is. So they're going to have that template, they're given that number, and then they go into the ballot booth privately in the with no one around. They cast their ballot with nobody having seen how they cast the ballots and fold it.
Yeah, because I was going to say, they don't want someone to be...
Yeah, no one would know how they would have voted.
Right. So social media has played a major part in our lives for the better part of a decade now. And a lot of things are going to be said on the day of voting, right, on the 29th.
Yes.
On your social media platforms as the IEC, would you be updating people throughout the day, letting people know what's going on? And I ask this question because sometimes, you know, far be it for me to accuse anyone of any wrongdoing, but it could happen that something goes left on the 29th. Are there channels where everyday South Africans can voice their, you know, issues or concerns on the day?
Yeah, is there like a line that you can phone or you can message?
Is there a website that we can go to?
Or must you talk to the electoral officer at each of the...
No,
you can. See something suspicious?
You can actually go into the IC website, but also on this Facebook page and mm-hmm. X, you can also go onto X page
right.
to raise those issues. But remember, there's also an issue of misinformation, disinformation and malinformation.
Yeah.
So the IC will then have people over and above our collaboration with service providers. We'll have people at the IC offices monitoring the discussions on the social media platforms and responding to issues if issues are, you know, based on not truth, based on lies. The IC will be able to respond to those things if they're either, like I say, it's disinformation or misinformation or it's just a deliberate giving people maliciously information.
Okay.
What I'm always interested in with these things is, are you allowed to put an X or are you allowed to put a tick, or does it not matter as long as you make a mark in that box? Because I've heard like nonsense stories about how if you go outside of the lines of the box, they throw away as a spoiled ballot.
Yeah.
Well,
are there any specific rules around this, or, you know, is it most of that nonsense?
No, the law says you must make a mark. As the IC, we prefer an X because an X is allows us to determine how a voter has voted, because we can look at where the lines cross. If the lines cross inside of the box, even if the other parts of the lines are outside of the box, we are able to determine.
That's why we like
the
an
intention
X.
Is there.
Yes,
right.
You can
that
see the
makes
intention.
A lot of sense. No one's ever explained that to me. That's why the X is useful.
Yes.
Okay. Did you know that?
No, I didn't.
Yeah.
Well, I appreciate the thought behind it, that's for sure. So I wanted to find out as well. So, you know, a lot of people register at certain places and perhaps on the day they have to travel or whatever the case may be. How do people apply for special votes and that kind of thing?
There are two things as it relates to not voting at your voting station.
Right.
One is a special vote and one is voting at another voting station where you are not registered. So let us first deal with the voting at another station where you're not registered. You need to inform the IC where you will be so that we're able to put your name on the list of people that are going to vote at that voting station.
Is there a time frame on this?
Yes, you will open from the 15th until the 17th of May.
Okay.
15th of March until the 17th of May for you to inform us where you will be on election day, so that you're able to vote there. Previously, you could vote anywhere in the country. You'd just go around looking, searching for short queues, and then you'd go in there. And that created problems in terms of the issues. Remember, people would start saying there are shortages of ballot papers here and there.
Mm-hmm.
And to a degree, they were telling the truth, because we send ballot papers in proportion to the number of people registered at the voting station. Now you know that the voting station next to you has got 300 people registered, or you are driving past, you see there's no queue there. You go in there, you vote, and you are done.
Mm-hmm.
But we had sent ballot papers for 300 people there. And then before you know it, 1,000 people have gone to that station because there are no people. Before you know it, there are no ballot papers. Now we've got to run around looking for ballot papers to replenish those ballot
God's
papers.
God's sake, go to the right station.
Yeah, so you must go where you are registered.
Okay.
Hence, we have said this time, if you can't vote where you are registered, you must inform us so that we send your ballot papers to wherever it is you want to vote. So on election day, your name will not be on the voter's roll for that voting station.
Right.
But it will be on a list of people that have applied to vote at that voting station.
Right.
So that party agents would know when you come into the station, there's a list, we call the Section 24A list. There's a list of people who have applied to vote at the station and they are not necessarily registered at the station. Those people won't be on the voter's roll for that station. They'd be on that list.
Now, and the applications for that are still open, right? They opened on the 15th of March and they close on the 27th of May.
No, on 17th of May.
Yes,
they'll close for For people to apply to vote. However, in the event that on the day of elections, you still are not at that place where you had indicated to us that you're going to vote, you can still vote at your voting station, your original voting station.
Okay. Was,
your name will still be on the voter's roll where you are registered.
Mm.
So this year, people will not be allowed to vote anywhere they like, as we used in the past. They won't, if you are not on the, either on that application list or not on the voter's roll for that voting station, you won't vote. Now, that is the one. Now, the second one is the special votes.
Mm.
Now, this special vote is utilized essentially by two types of people. People who would not be at the voting station on the day of elections. Or
that's
people,
like people who are working, like policemen.
Or people that are infirmed that are not able to go to the voting station. Now, the IC makes provision for us as the IC staff for to be able to visit those people. But for us to know these people, they must apply between 15 April and 3 May. They must apply and tell us that I'd like to have a vote either at the voting station on special voting days, or I'd like to have IEC visit me at my home to help me vote. So those are the two ways that people can vote.
And should you speak to the party agents or should you speak to the IEC?
For applying for a special vote?
Yeah.
No, you can apply for a special vote in three ways, either on online or via SMS, or coming to sending someone to come to our offices to apply for it, or you yourself coming to apply for a special vote.
So
now, before I step off the special vote, the special voting days are the 2 days before elections, mm-hmm. 27, 28. Those are special voting days.
Okay.
And that will happen from 9 to 5. IEC will visit people who had applied for special votes at their homes or hospitals,
mm-hmm.
or those that have applied to vote at the voting stations because they're not infirmed, they can walk to the voting stations on those 2 days.
So this is not so much a question, more than a commentary. IEC has done, you know, voter registration online. You've just mentioned that there's a lot of communication that can happen via SMS and all of that stuff. I'm not the only one that thinks this. Why can't we just vote online? Like, I understand there could be a whole lot of verification issues and all of that stuff. But when are we going to get to a point where we can vote from home, essentially?
That's a very good question. But remember, as the IC, we implemented the law. We don't make the law.
Okay.
As the law states now, you must vote in person at the voting station.
Mm-hmm.
So once the law, if the law,
stop trying to change the law, Jack. You don't just get to decide whatever you
want.
We
are in 2024, Gareth. We're gonna have to change these things.
Yeah, but remember, it's a myth that if people can vote online, that will increase voter participation. I'm sure you have that scenario at tertiary institutions where they're voting online,
mm-hmm.
and the voter turnout is dismal.
Yeah.
That's a very good point.
Very good point.
And thought of it that way.
Mm.
All right, so what is the role of these party agents? Because I find them, someone in the comments here says those party agents are very annoying. Therefore, my question. But they have to be there, right? So each party has the right to have someone at every station.
Yes.
And they get to observe the counting. They get to observe to make sure that there's no bad behavior going on. But they're not allowed to set up their branding within a certain range of the station. How does all that work, and who's disciplining these people? How did the IEC keep track of these party agents?
Okay, first let us start with this issue of the range where parties can put their tables. There isn't any distance that the parties can put in their tables.
Oh, so they can be close.
Yeah, they can be all they have to do is to be outside of the boundaries of the voting station.
But they can be right there if they want to.
They can be at the gate.
Okay.
Yeah, so this issue about 500 meters and water, there's nothing like that.
Mm-hmm.
So they must be outside of the boundaries of the voting stations. What the law requires is for them not to impede access.
Okay.
So they must not be stopping people from coming in. Now, that's the issue. Now, as it relates to party agents would be people that are monitoring the process inside of the voting station.
Mm.
So these people, parties will place, we place them behind, number one, the voter's roll officer,
mm-hmm.
so that they can see if the person, once the person comes in, they show their ID And then if indeed the person on the ID is the same person as the person that is scratched off the voter's roll, parties must observe that. And then once they move that, they must have also party agents standing behind our ballot paper issuer to make sure that the people are given the requisite number of ballot papers and the correct ballot papers. Mm. And those ballot papers are stamped. By correct, I mean they are not given two of the same. They've got to get one each.
Yeah,
one for national for political parties, one for national for political parties, independent candidates, and one for the province. So parties must observe that these people are getting those three ballot papers, and that those three ballot papers are stamped at the back.
Okay,
you understand? And then they must parties are standing behind the inker to make sure that the inker inks the voter. Once the voter has been given the ballot papers, then they're able to go to the ballot booth. Parties don't follow. Don't have a party agent.
They're not allowed to follow you in there.
Yeah. No, we don't have party agents there. Mm. We don't even have IC staff there. But we have a monitor that monitors that once a voter votes, and they don't leave, you know, signs or markings in the vote in the ballot booth, but that the voter fold all the three ballot papers that we must see, that they leave the ballot booth. Yeah, our ballot booth will be what we call ATM style.
Okay.
They'll be standing in such a way that all of us can see the back of the voter.
Okay.
You understand? The voter won't be behind.
Mm-hmm.
All of us can see the back of the voter. They must come out with the three ballot papers and go to the three ballot boxes.
A lot of people watching you when you vote.
Yeah. Yep.
And put their ballot papers, and then there'd be a ballot box, a monitor that monitors that. In fact, the person puts all the ballot papers. They don't leave the voting station with the ballot papers. So over and above the monitors, which are party agents, we have observers. Now, party agents, because they're monitoring, they can object. Because they're monitoring to see if we're doing our work according to the law.
Mm-hmm.
They can object if they think things are not going right. They have a presiding officer where they can raise the issues with. Then we have got observers, which are either domestic observers or international observers.
Mm-hmm.
These are the people that also are in the voting station to observe that indeed we are doing our work in terms of the law. And all they have to do is to observe, not to object, not to participate in any way, observe and write their reports and submit their reports, not to us first, but to everybody to say, we have observed this election. This is our take on the outcome of the election before they give the IC that report.
And it's interesting because the DA got into the news not so long ago for requesting people from the US to come down to observe. Our elections. So I'm glad that you brought that up. So this might sound like a stupid question, but I'm going to ask it anyway.
Don't worry, there are a couple of questions from people who are listening here as well. There is no stupid question, so go ahead.
So I am very cognizant of alcohol and drug use in this country. Are there any safeguards to someone perhaps walking into the voting station inebriated or, you know, high on some sort of...
Yeah, what do we do?
What do we do with those kind of people? Do we just let them go on with their vote? Or is there some sort of mechanism that is employed that says that you have to show up at least sober to vote?
No. The law says the right to vote is universal to all adults.
Even drunks.
Even drunks. The only issue is if you are causing commotion at the voting station, then we'd ask the security officers to remove you.
Okay.
Commotion.
Yeah. So, Joe, there you have it, guys. Don't show up drunk.
I didn't even consider that. That's a very good point. So here's some other things I hadn't considered. Donna says, I heard if you don't place your vote goes to the leading party in that area. Is this true?
No, that's a myth.
Mm-hmm.
It's a myth because we only count votes that are in the ballot box at the voting station. So once we have counted the votes that are in the ballot box, party agents are allowed to sign the result slip, three types of result slips.
Mm-hmm.
One, not only party agents, but also agents of independent candidates. One, it's a dummy ballot paper where all the information after counting is placed. It's a dummy ballot paper. If they agree with the information that is on the dummy ballot paper, they then they sign. That information is then moved onto the ballot paper, the result slip. No, so one will be dummy result slip, and then that information is moved to the actual result slip. Mm-hmm. But that actual result slip, there will be two of it, two of the same.
Okay.
Two for the national, two for the regional, and two for the provincial.
Mm-hmm.
Now, party agents must sign the dummy result slip and those two if they agree with the information that is on the ballot, on the result slips.
Right.
Now, once we have done that, that result slip, one, the dummy will remain in the diary of the presiding officer. The one result slip will be pasted on the outside of the voting station. Anybody that walk past can go there and see how parties have, or every contestants have fared. And then the third one will be then be taken to the IC office where it's going to be scanned into the system. And then once we scan it into the system, we then punch the numbers that are on this result slip that is scanned into the system. We punch them now on the results result system so that that information is transferred into the result system. Now that result slip can be viewed by all parties. They have access to the system,
mm-hmm.
so they can see how we have contested. They fight as parties, and they can object if the information that is on the result slip is not the same as the information that is punched in by the IEC. But remember, party agents would have also taken pictures of the result slips.
Okay.
Now, once we have all those numbers, then we determine who has won and who have lost. Now, the fact that you have not voted, your vote cannot be counted because
yeah.
it's not there.
It's not there. So, and that myth is it runs rampant. A lot of people believe that if you have cast a vote before and you choose not to vote in a following election, you know, the ruling party somehow takes your vote. So thank you for dispelling that myth. I wanted to find out, as far as the vote counting is concerned, does it happen at the voting station, or are those ballot boxes removed from the voting station and then counted at a different place?
Because we again, like, there are all these urban myths. So this is not these are not stupid questions.
Yeah,
we've heard stories about, oh no, they get taken somewhere else for the count. That's not true, right? It happens at the station.
No, it's not true. Once voting is concluded, we then turn the voting station into a counting station.
Okay.
So party agents will still be there. Maybe. However,
is that your phone?
I don't believe it.
Don't worry. It happens.
It happens. It's all right.
It's still directing me here.
Oh, is that your direction?
Yeah.
Yes, it's still bringing me here.
All right, go on.
You understand? Yeah, so what was the issue so that I don't miss it again?
The vote counting.
Yeah, it happens at the voting station.
Okay.
Yeah. What is going to happen? That station is then set up in the presence of party agents to prepare it for counting. In the event that we are unable to count at the voting station, we would indeed remove those ballot boxes.
So what would those conditions be if, for example, there was a fire or something like that, right?
Yes, or the environment is not conducive for us counting there, you know. There would be, some form of violence and rioting outside. Would, in the presence of the party agents, would move those ballot papers or ballot boxes to a different venue where we're going to count. And in that instance, we allow party agents or parties to give us four agents now to come and observe this process at the voting station. If we have not changed, the voting station becomes a counting station. We give them we allow them two party agents to come and observe.
Okay. How open is the IEC to having civil society, if I can put it that way, to take part in the entire process? So I'm Jack. I want to vote. I'm registered. Everything is great. I go there. I cast my ballot. But I also want to be involved in other ways to actually see the entire process holistically.
What do you mean, as a volunteer or just because you're a busybody?
Oh, yeah. If you're both, actually. If you want to volunteer, or you are a busybody, or you are a wannabe journalist trying to figure out the entire process, you just want to learn what the IEC is all about. Is there an open invitation for people like that?
Yeah, there is a way that you can do it through being an observer.
Okay.
You can, a civil society organization, when you talk about what you call domestic observers. We're talking about all these civil society organizations, churches, NGOs and all. They apply to be observers. Mm. And then the IC accredits them as observers. And then they speak to a person like you to represent them as an observer, to go and observe on their behalf and come back with a report. But okay. For political parties, remember political parties
already have their
agents yeah. which would ordinarily be people that support that party that want to come and observe this process.
But surely by now you would have already have made yourself available. I mean, you wouldn't do this at the last minute.
No.
Would you? You wouldn't go and do it on voting day. Hey, I'm here to help. That's suspicious.
Very suspicious. No,
in fact,
they're trying to get you to change your direction here.
Yes, they are.
In fact, we've been going around training party agents.
How does that work?
We train as the IC.
Here's a question from Durban Dope. He says, "This is the kind of thing that people pick up, right?" He says that last time he went to vote, the ANC people were sleeping under a tree. So I don't think it's just the ANC. There's sometimes other parties too. But in this case, he says it was the ANC people who were sleeping under the tree.
Well, remember, there should be a distinction between party volunteers or workers and party agents.
Okay.
Party agents are inside of the voting station.
Mm.
Those are the people that monitor the process. Those that are standing outside of the station are those that are, you know, hyping their political parties, hyping their independent candidates, you know, assisting if they want to assist people to check if they're on the voters' roll and things like that. But those are not party agents.
Mm.
The party agents are inside of the voting station.
Now, you know, a lot of people choose to protest in a variety of ways. What happens to the spoiled ballots? Like if someone decides to ruin their ballot on the day of voting as a form of protest or civil disobedience, sure. What happens with those ballots?
Those people are not assisting in building our democracy. Because without people determining who becomes government, anybody can be government. Now, mm-hmm. if you have spoiled your ballot paper, you are just the same as the person who did not go to the voting station. Because that ballot paper is not counted towards determining who becomes government.
But some people think it's a legitimate form of protest. I mean, yeah. That's where Jack's not wrong.
Yeah, a lot of people are of the opinion that instead of casting your vote for any of the political parties that are in the running.
Yeah, you don't believe any of them are doing the right thing, so you spoil your ballot.
You choose to spoil your ballot.
Yeah, that sounds, as I'm saying, you are not assisting in our democracy because we have not voted. There's no difference between you and the person that is sitting at home not going to the voting station. There's absolutely no difference because that ballot, you are going to count it as spoiled and don't assist in us determining who becomes government, whatever issues that you are complaining about will remain. They won't change.
Yeah, that's true.
Because you would have changed nothing.
But you know, Jack might be one of those principled, irritating people who thinks that it's important for him to, you know, I'm going to complain by spoiling my ballot.
Yeah.
No,
What do you do with the spoiled ballots?
We just count it as spoiled.
Oh, and then do you keep them with the others?
Yeah, we put them in an envelope for spoiled ballot papers.
Mm.
In fact, we get with a rubber band for spoiled ballot papers. Those that have been cancelled, if people have made a mistake, we put them in an envelope. But if you have spoiled your ballot, you are as the same as the person who has not voted.
At all.
At all. And whatever issues that you are complaining about will remain the same. They won't change because you have not utilized your vote to change them.
Interesting.
And there are a number of ways of spoiling your ballot, but you give us a pen in the booth.
Yes.
You mustn't bring your own pen?
No.
Oh.
There will be a pen in the booth.
Okay, because there's someone here who says, what if I throw orange paint on it? But you won't be allowed to bring in orange paint.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you still mark the people's finger with that indelible ink.
The thumbnail.
Okay. How long does that last?
Well, to some people last months.
Yeah.
It depends on.
It takes forever.
Because they don't wash their hands.
Yes. Yeah. Maybe you wash your hands. It takes a long time.
Now, just to go back to the ballot papers, the design of the ballot papers, who does all of that? How does that work?
The IC designs the ballot paper depending on the number of candidates on the ballot paper. And then we then take it out for printing, but we design the ballot paper.
Mm.
Hence, we are able to tell you that this year is going to be the national one will be two columns because of the number of parties, and the provincial one will be one column, and the regional ones, depending on the number of people contesting, maybe just be one column.
Very good. Well, I think that's a lot to take in, but we are trying to make everybody aware of whatever's going on here. One or two quick last questions before we let you go. Someone has to ask Mas what that ink actually is. It ain't no normal permanent marker. What is in there? Silver nitrate?
No, I wouldn't know the contents, but what I know, it's indelible ink.
Mm-hmm.
It's an ink, once we put it there, it won't... you won't be able to move it. Hence, we must spend like a 1 or 2 seconds after we put it. We must spend 1 or 2 seconds so that it dries quickly,
right,
and then you can move on. And but also so that it does not dye your ballot paper.
Mm.
But right, once it's there, it will last. Like I said, times months on other people.
Depends how clean you are. Just one last comment for you, because I think this is a very good point. And you know, you guys at the IEC have been tremendous. You've been here anytime we've asked you to come. And I saw this comment from Carl earlier, and Carl is one of our listeners who's he complains about everything. But he says, every time you have someone from the IEC on, I feel more confident about our ability to do this thing properly. So a nice job.
Very good job.
High praise coming from Carl there. But thank you, Mas. Very good to have you here. Mas Pizzo is the Assistant Manager of Outreach at the IEC. And we have another episode of Democracy 101 to help people cast their votes properly. Thanks for the good work you guys are doing.
Thank you,
Mas. Very nice to see you.
Thank you, guys.
Mas Pizzo. And that is Democracy 101 for this morning. Very good to see you. Thanks, Mas. Very good. Just hang around. We want to do a picture with you afterwards.
Yeah.
Don't run away straight away. We've also got some more to do, so we're not finished quite yet. And we'll find out all about that in a short while. Are there any other things that you needed to know? Because really, we've asked them about drunk people.
We've
asked them about the ink.
Yep.
We've asked them about the party agents.
All of it.
Mm. They can set up right outside.
Exactly. That was a bit of an eye-opener too. Like, I actually thought they would have some sort of restriction as to where these parties are allowed to show up to, outside of their agents, that is. So... That was very eye-opening. But truth be told, like, the drunk question?
Mm.
Like, I have some genuine concerns about this.
I don't think drunk people should be allowed to vote.
I don't think so either. Because,
they don't seem to me to be very professional or thoughtful people. These are not the guys that you would trust to make the right decision.
Yeah. And, you know, in my neighborhood, sometimes on like during the week, you'll wake up at like 8, 9 in the morning and someone's already drunk at that point in time. So, given the fact that the 29th is going to be a public holiday as well.
Oh, yeah.
It's a recipe for South African drinkers to get their drink on and then decide to go vote. And if you are stumbling into
10 really drunk people all go and vote
and
they make their mind up because they're drunk, they all vote for whoever's at the bottom or the top of the ballot paper.
My goodness.
I suppose your vote counts.
Yeah. I mean, it'll have to, seemingly. But, you know, excuse me for being worried.
Clearly, it's not a problem. You can go high.
Yeah, you could.
You could. There are public indecency rules, so you can't pitch up naked.
Yeah, of course.
For example.
Yeah.
But
like, please keep your clothes on.
They'll pretty much let anyone vote.
Seemingly. Like, if you're on the voter's roll and
you're allowed.
You've got a pulse and you can walk to the voting station. Jesus. Go nuts, man. Go crazy.
And there are obviously going to be lots of people. I like the way he's like, no, spoiling ballots, waste of time.
Yeah,
you're not really participating.
But I mean, like, on some level, I feel like you're participating more than someone who chose not to vote at all.
Except nobody actually knows that you protest. You come out of there and you're like, I spoiled my ballot. I'm a principled person. Who cares?
But here's my question, Gareth. What if it happens that you've got a million spoiled ballots?
Carl says, a drunk person voting DA or Action SA is better than a sober person voting. Yeah, well, Carl's clearly very biased here.
Yeah, very, very, very biased.
Don't you tell the drunks what to do, Carl.
Yeah.
Leave them alone. What were you saying now? You said... The spoiled ballots, what if we have a million of them?
Yeah. What happens then?
Well, then that clearly shows that there are a million really pissed off people in this country.
And I think
so that is, that's a valid,
you know, they did statement. Something to show their level of discontent, and
for sure
they used it by, you know, spoiling their ballots. I think if the number is high enough, it's something we should all look at and have a genuine conversation about. It could be that there are people who actually want to take part in the electoral process, but they're just not happy with the options that they have.
They think the political parties are all rubbish.
There you go. And on, for me personally, I feel like we've got way too many of them to start with. And science will tell you the more options you have, the more difficult it is for you to make one choice. So
there is something else. Dan Mulyani said the other day when he was on with us, that he has a framed
ballot
paper from
94.
So I wonder, I mean, I don't think you're allowed to take any of these out during the voting.
I don't think so.
So not on election day, but there might be some left over afterwards. I wonder if you could buy those.
I wonder.
Or just get them for free. Because they're going to be a bunch that'll... Remember the last time those guys were here, they told us how many they print. They print like 90 million.
Yeah, it's insane. It's a lot.
Ballot papers.
Yeah.
So it's a huge amount of paper. So just in terms of logistics, paper, ink, printers all over the country who are busy doing this stuff. And then, of course, they've got to be legit because you can't have them printing extra ones.
Of course.
It's like a... This is a major process.
It is.
Honestly, I agree with Carl and what he said earlier. I feel much more safe and secure about our democracy knowing that the IEC are in charge.
Definitely.
I was very worried about them. Someone came to see me last year and they're like, oh, no, but they're going to rig the election, whoever they are. And the IEC are in on it. I got to tell you, after meeting these guys and after hearing about the process, they answer every single question. They've got people at every stage who are going to make it impossible. For anyone who really wants to bring about voter fraud.
Yeah.
It's going to be a very difficult thing to do. Let's not say impossible. But there's a huge probability that it is highly unlikely to be able to succeed.
Yep. And the fact that they've brought in different people on from different levels within the IEC, all of them keep saying the exact same thing. Yeah. There isn't a deviation.
There's consistency.
So I have full trust in them.
I mean, there might be some terrible, terrible place somewhere in a far-flung corner of South Africa where no election observers are, where none of the party agents come, where the IEC guy has been bribed.
Or some nonsense like
There's a small potential for that to have occurred in some terrible part of South Africa.
Yeah.
But frankly, that terrible part of South Africa, they deserve they deserve whatever they get because they're so terrible and far-flung and nobody cares.
You know what? It actually just dawned on me. There was a question I forgot to ask. Like, cell phones, man. In the previous election, I saw a couple of people posting the...
Yeah, pictures.
The pictures you're of not, the ballot itself.
Technically, you're not, you're not meant to do that.
See? I wanted to find out what kind of legal recourse there is for that.
All right, well, I'm going to let
keep
you...
keep that one in the chamber.
keep that one in the chamber. Jack Montlante, thank you very much. That's Democracy 101 for this morning. I've got something cool to tell you about today, and this is really involving one of our friends who's been on the show many times. We know him well. He is none other than Jaco Voigt. He is, of course, from Catalytic, and he does a show called Unbundled. And we're talking today about Perfect Works Consulting, and also the stuff that happens with Cisco community programs and skills development. So we're going to talk about small businesses, which are the backbone of South Africa's economy. And for those people who are listening to us, and I know there are lots of small business owners who listen to our show on Cliff Central, this is really for you. As a small business, you might face significant risks in the digital age. We've talked often about cyber threats, and they could have the power to cripple just about any business, especially a small business, because you might not have a huge department of people who take care of this stuff. Even the most resilient businesses could be taken out by this stuff. Global studies show a staggering 61% of businesses couldn't recover after an attack or a data breach. That is a very scary number. So to help us understand this and make some sense of it, I'm going to welcome again, Jaco. How's it, Jaco Voigt? How are you, sir? It's nice to see you.
Well, and you?
Yeah, very, very good. Excellent. So you've been busy. I heard that you were on some race over the weekend. Just let's deal with that first.
I was in Eastern Cape in Adu, in the Elephant Park.
Yes.
In St. Parks. I was saying to Conrad now when we got there, it was quite hot. So On Friday, it was like a sweltering 44 degrees, and there's the guys that do 100 miles. So
44 degrees?
And they kicked off a 160-kilometer race in 44 degrees. I only did 50, so it wasn't that far. But yeah, it was...
Did you win?
I won, but I wasn't first. No.
Okay, you know I always say if you didn't come first, you should have stopped halfway through and gone home. But well done, Jaco. That's very good. Let's just talk about this frightening number that I just read out now. Global studies show a staggering 61% of businesses could not recover after an attack or data breach.
So, Gareth, you know, so number one, as you rightly pointed out, we always talk about our important small businesses. And yeah. I think from a tech perspective, there's always a perception that small businesses, I almost want to say, should buy down, you know, that the big global tech giants, the likes of Cisco, is almost... It's unobtainable for them. It's too expensive for them and stuff like that. And I think part of what we're focusing on now and what we're doing is to say, listen, understand what's available in the market. And if you look at guys like Cisco specifically, they've launched specific ranges for small businesses. So like we've got some of those Wi-Fi access points in here. You've noticed what the difference was when we put that in.
Huge difference.
And I think that's the key point for us is those bad things happen to small businesses as well. And when it happens, exactly that, the big guys have deep pockets; they can recover.
Sure.
If you're a small business and you didn't put the best tech in, it's probably going to be a lot harder to recover. And I think that's part of the key message that we're putting out there.
Well, I want to talk to Conrad in a minute, and I'm going to introduce Conrad to everybody in just a second. He's the leader of country digital acceleration for Cisco in sub-Saharan Africa. It's nice to see you here, Conrad. But I want to read this out quickly. Scary, another scary number. South Africa has emerged sixth most targeted nation worldwide for cyber attacks. Is that true?
Yeah.
Sixth?
Yeah.
You know, we often complain that we don't come first. But this is not a list we want to be on. Not that high up.
Exactly. Exactly that. And again, you know, if you look at our, at the way the economy is structured, small businesses make a massive portion of our
Huge.
Economy. So, and again, and I think part of the reason why we are so targeted is because you know it's easy. If people don't pay attention to putting the right tools in place, we will be high up on the list.
So, Conrad, welcome to the show. And how do you guys at Cisco handle this stuff? Because as Jaco said, a lot of small businesses don't realize how dangerous this could be, and they often think they're too insignificant to be on the radar for cyber criminals, but that's not the case.
Morning, Gareth. No, it's definitely not. And I think, you know, from our point of view, we obviously have an entire portfolio that speaks to the SMB. I think for us, it's all around education as well. So I think, you know, it starts with... our SMME development programs, raising that awareness and visibility, but also getting the message out there. So from our side, we have a secure SMB portfolio that really focuses on the small business. And it starts from, you know, small device protection, user protection, you know, so making sure that the person that logs in and, you know, authenticates is authenticated.
You've just made me think now. I mean, it's not just... Yeah, big networks that accompany. It's your phone.
Yep,
it's your phone. And for most of us, our phone is the place we do a lot of business.
Yes,
correct.
I was messaging you last night.
Yeah,
Jaco. So, I mean, that's how we do business these days, right? So, this is important. You need to know what protections you have.
Correct,
Gareth. For me, around that is the visibility. So if you look in the Cisco in that SMB stable, there's a lot of Cisco's done a lot of good work around dashboards that gives you visibility. And for me, when we installed it in our office back in the day, probably about 5 years ago, we went with the Meraki range, which is in the upcoming projects that we have, we will delve a lot into that and do a lot of work around education.
Right.
I mean, that's obviously part of what we're talking about today is we've got some exciting work we're doing with Cisco where we can have probably about five or six episodes where we talking to customers around what's available in the stack. And I remember the first time when we installed it in our office, we were about, I think about, let's say 50 staff. So you go 50 staff, you think there's maybe 50, 60 devices on the network. The first day when we installed it, 163. So you go like,
wow. Is that people's phones, iPads?
All of that type of stuff. We had some guys that brought their home computers to the office so that they could download movies or update their computers because you know the bandwidth at the office is better than at home. So that visibility you actually get shocked. You go like, flip, I thought I was catering for 50-60 devices. I'm triple that amount.
And for a cyber criminal, that's triple the opportunity.
Exactly that.
Right, because they only have to find one weak link.
Exactly that. Exactly.
All right, so I'm excited about the fact that we now can delve into all the details around these products, around what it is you guys do at Cisco, Conrad. But, I mean, you've spoken to people on your show, on Unbundled, about cybersecurity. We've got a whole catalog of really, really interesting stuff. What are you looking to learn from this?
So I think upcoming initiative that we're doing is obviously in conjunction with Cisco. So we will be talking product specific, which typically we don't normally do, but we're going to go into trying to make a very technical world very understandable for the business owner. So what we're trying to do is explain to the business owner, because in the SMB space, that's typically where it sits in that business owner or the FD.
Yeah, they're the ones who have to make the decision.
Exactly. Right. And now I think we're obsessed about the fact that, you know, we don't want to over-technify it and make it too complicated. So we're gonna delve into some of that, the products, and then you know, make it simple to understand and understand the benefit of it. And again, like I'm saying, we want to break the perception or the mold, this mold that Cisco is only for big business, which it's not.
So, Conrad, I imagine there's also, it's not just the product, but it's also training people and getting them to understand the products, right? So you guys help with that too?
We do, Gareth. So as part of our country digital acceleration program, we've created a number of innovation centers. In the innovation centers, we help with certifying SMMEs and upcoming businesses through the program. So we get them certified across all the different technology areas. Cybersecurity right now is a very big focus. We just concluded an entire cybersecurity cohort, actually. We trained 30 companies to look at cybersecurity. On the back of that, obviously, we have, I'm going to say citizen enablement as well, where we have publicly available training, you know. And I think that's the big thing here as well, is just from a citizen visibility point of view, et cetera, if we raise that awareness, hopefully we won't be number 6 on the global list for much longer, right?
Yeah, I don't like that number at all.
Yeah, same with us. You know, and that's really where it starts. So we drive all of that continuously through all of our innovation and incubation centers. And we're continuing to build those out across the country as well.
What are these hackers, what are these crooks looking to do? Steal your money, shut down your business, ransomware, what are they doing?
I think ransomware is probably the most predominant thing that I hear about when we talk about it. And that's basically where they lock all of your systems in your business and you have to pay them to unlock it. And that happens to actually a lot more frequently to people that I know. You know, I think 5 years ago, we would have heard of somebody, maybe a big international company. Now it's people that we do business with where they phone and say, listen, I got ransomware. I'm locked out of my system. It takes a week or two to recover from it if you can. And again, that and I mean, we know anything human is not 100% bulletproof. So you can always still get it, but that's part of the fact that and I mean, you know how passionate we are about small businesses. As a small business, just because you're a small business doesn't mean that you shouldn't pay attention to those type of things.
No.
So that's and again,
the
that's
opposite's
where,
probably true.
Exactly
right?
That, and that's where the Cisco suite comes into play, where you know from your firewall, which is sort of the your gateway to the internet, if I can call it that, to even some software overlay where it looks at those systems and helps to protect it. You know, it's a big global company that's obsessed about security, and I think that's part of the reason why we're so excited about this initiative that we're launching with Cisco.
I think it's terrific. All right, I'm looking forward to it, guys, and thank you for coming in on this show to tell us about it, Jaco. Conrad, we'll get to know you properly and we'll get to hear all about what you guys are doing at Cisco in the next couple of episodes.
Looking forward
to it. Yeah, I look forward to it too. Let's get off that list at number six. And I see here also, just to make it even worse, Accenture's cost of cybercrime study has revealed 43% of businesses fall victim to cyber attacks each year. 43% of these small businesses.
That's almost one in two. Yeah.
Yes, sis. Now I'm paranoid.
Oh, and rightly so. People should be. And again, that's part of the thing that we talk about often is I think we're going to educate business owners in a fun, easy to understand way.
For
we're
sure.
Not going to be overly technical. And come view the episodes.
Definitely.
We're gonna do some competitions where businesses can win stuff. So in other words, if you pay attention to what it is that we're teaching, and you let us maybe do an assessment of your environment, there's prizes up for grabs. So we're gonna do very very nice stuff on the Real Network in the coming weeks.
Absolutely. And Jody says here, hackers make between 5 and 20 daily attempts to access. Jody, this is Jody, just their Microsoft account.
Yeah.
And their location varies from Canada, Russia, Vietnam, Netherlands, London, everywhere.
No, that's and again, that's why your hardware and software combination of what you deploy in your business, there's tools that can protect you against that.
Are you guys always working on trying to resolve new, because these hackers are smart. They're always coming up with new ideas, right?
Definitely. So, I mean, from Cisco's point of view, we have the largest threat intelligence organization globally, a company called Cisco Talos.
Mm.
And to give you an idea, we kind of combat about 6 billion attacks daily.
You're like the FBI of hackers.
Pretty much, yes. So we always have the visibility on what's happening in real time. And, you know, the benefit for us through that threat intelligence engine is that we can drive the protection through all of our product suites, you know, to keep everybody safe in real time, pretty much.
Conrad Steyn, it is a pleasure to meet you, and I know that we're going to have lots to talk to you about. I'd rather have you on my side than not.
Thank you.
Jaco, we'll talk to you in the next couple of days.
Perfect.
Fantastic.
Thank you very much.
I look forward to it. Thank you, everybody. We will see you tomorrow. Don't go away. Lots more on The Real Network and on the podcast party, things like Democracy 101. All kinds of good stuff. Stick around for that and more. Cheers, everybody. Bye-bye.